ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी।
हरे कृष्णा। So we are on the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5, final instructions to Maharaj Parikshit. And yesterday we discussed quite a few verses beginning from text 5. But after the class, some devotees had some doubts about the 5th verse. So now, since there's an opportunity, I thought we could discuss this particular verse again so that these questions may be answered and dealt with. It's 5th on the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So text 5. Ghate Bhinne Ghata Akashah Sya Yatha Pura Evam Dehe Mrite Jivah Brahma Sampadyate Punah. Ghate Bhinne Ghata
Akashah
Akashah Syad Yatha Pura Evam Dehe Mrite Jivo Brahma Sampadyate Punah. Ghate, a pot. Bhinne, when it is broken. Ghata Akashah,
the sky within the pot.
Akashah,
sky.
Syat, remains. Yatha,
as.
Pura,
previously.
Evam,
similarly,
Dehe,
the body,
Mrite,
when it is given up,
Jivaha, I beg your pardon, Mrite, I'll repeat that,
Mrite,
when it is given up,
in the liberated condition,
Jivaha,
the individual soul,
Brahma,
his spiritual status,
Sampadyate,
attains,
Punaha,
once again.
Translation. When a pot is broken, the portion of sky within the pot remains as the element sky, just as before. In the same way, when the gross and subtle bodies die, the living entity within resumes his spiritual identity. Sounds familiar? No wonder the devotees were asking the questions about this pot and sky theory, ghatakash patakash. So we'll just talk about this topic in the class today. Om Jnana Timirandhas Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नम ओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो द पासिंग अवे ऑफ शुकदेव गोस्वामी इज बीइंग डिस्क्राइब्ड इन दिस चैप्टर एंड वी हैव कम टू द पॉइंट व्हेन Shukadev, I beg your pardon, Parikshit Maharaj is passing away, is being described in this chapter, and we have reached the point when he has almost done so. He is almost there, but not quite. The Takshak snake still has to come and bite him. But Parikshit Maharaj is completely absorbed now in transcendence, in Krishna's lotus feet. And the transformations that happen on the platform of the material body, and also the fact that the soul remains separate from all this, is being described here in the verse, text number 5. Now, ghate bhinne ghata akasha akasha syad yatha pura. So when a pot is broken, the portion of sky within the pot remains as the element sky, just as before. Now, just a brief background about this. This ghatakash patakash theory is something that is very popular with the Mayavadis. And Srila Prabhupada in his teachings, and indeed all the Vaishnava Acharyas cutting across the different sampradayas, have often refuted this conception. What is this ghatakash patakash idea? The word ghata means a pot in Sanskrit. Akash means the sky or space. Patakash refers to the unlimited space in the totality of creation. So ghatakash patakash refers to the analogy that there is sky within a pot. There is space. And when the pot is broken, then the space within the pot merges with the space outside the pot, and it's all one. So there's no difference. It's only when the pot exists that there seems to be some distinction between the sky within and the sky without. So sky is actually unlimited. So it's patakash. So the unlimited space is what is everywhere. But when a certain portion of that space is circumscribed by the limits of a pot, then the sky within the pot is called ghatakash. So the breaking of the pot refers now to the analogy refers to the ultimate liberation of the living entity, when the gross and subtle bodies are both destroyed, as is being mentioned here. So the Mayavadis say that the living entity is Brahma or spirit. And the absolute truth is also Brahma and spirit. And that the living entity is also actually the ultimate absolute truth. It's just that when the supreme absolute truth is divided, or it comes under a cloud because of material designation, it comes under the influence of Maya, a portion of that absolute truth, that spiritual substance, gets circumscribed, so to speak, by the material body and the material designations, just as the sky within the pot is circumscribed by the pot. But actually it's the same, that's what they say. And when the point of liberation comes, then all these material designations are destroyed. And at that time, one realizes one's identity as the Supreme. So it's all one actually. It's just a matter of the distinction breaking because of the material identification with the body. At the point of liberation, this material identification is destroyed. One transcends the bodily designations, and therefore the sky within and the sky without are the same. So this is the Ghatakash Patakash theory. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada makes a mention of this also. And he says that there are three kinds of people. One is called Adhama, the lowest. The other is called Madhyama, which means mediocre. And the third is called Uttama, means the best. So the Adhama, or the lowest, are those who think like this. Ghatakash, Patakash. They think that we are all the Supreme. And perhaps for many who haven't lived in India, it may not seem such a big deal, because we don't hear so much of all this. But in India, if you go to any spiritual organization, you are more likely than not to find some strain or some kind of Mayavad philosophy. And when I became a devotee, I remember, I also didn't quite realize the ferocity with which these people espouse this principle. I remember one time when I was in Calcutta, I was doing book distribution. And I went to this crossing by this auditorium where the topic was some famous sannyasi who was a Mayavadi. And the topic was, "You are the whole." W-H-O-L-E. You are the whole. So, you know, as a new devotee, you're always fired up to smash everyone and, you know, who's opposing. And so I thought, let me go and see at least what it's all about. And when I entered, then there was this auditorium. It was an air-conditioned auditorium, very sophisticated audience. And this sannyasi he wasn't sitting on an asana. He was pacing up and down the stage with a handheld mic. And he was quite a charismatic and powerful speaker, because he was very fluent and he was gesticulating. He was really having impact on the audience. And then he saw me coming in. See, of course he didn't know me, but you know, looking at the appearance, then he changed track. And then he began a vicious thing on, what do you do in Vaikuntha? Do you sit in front of the Lord and just look at His face, and then He looks at your face? He will get tired of you, and you will get tired of Him, and He will say, go away. I mean, I'm saying polite words, actually. He used much stronger words. And then he went on and on and on, and I was thinking, yes, this is Mayavad. Now I understand. I had only read it in Prabhupada's books. And now when you actually come across these people, some of them, they are really serious about their philosophy. They're really into it. So he was saying, what is this humility, humility? You are not small. You are the whole. You are the entire, the complete. That's the whole topic, right? You are the whole. And he went on and on, and I just could not then take it. I had to leave after a few minutes, because it was really jarring to the ear. And I didn't see any possibility that his followers would allow me to distribute any books there. So then I left. Another time it so happened, I was also distributing books. I usually never had the service of distributing books, but somehow whenever I did on those few occasions, I always bumped into these people. So one time there was a Pandal program, this time it was in Bombay. And there was a very famous Mayavadi sannyasi, another one, whose disciple had a big lecture in Sydney recently, I heard. So then I saw this board, And then I said, Mike, let's see what's happening there. And then I went in there, and again he saw me from a distance. He saw my appearance. And he was talking, and then he suddenly switched his topic and he said, Satatam Kirtayanto Maam Yatantas Jatadavrita. He started, you know, in a very sarcastic way he was speaking. And, you know, always chanting. But this Satatam Kirtayanto Maam doesn't mean Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, you know, because he saw me coming. So he started mimicking, you see, the devotees, and he was really crude about it. And then I said, my God, this is the famous so-and-so. Okay. And then I also realized that there was not much I could do there. So they are for real, the Mayavadis. They're serious about their business. But actually, if you really analyze it from the point of view of the acharyas, we can see that there is severe fallacies and defects in their arguments. For one thing, Srila Prabhupada, I remember, he said, but are we a pot? That's the first simplest argument he gave against this Ghatakash Patakash. Are we a pot? So the analogy is not appropriate. And then he went on to explain that if the Supreme Brahman can be brought under the influence of Maya, then how is the Supreme Brahman supreme? That means Maya must be supreme. That means the Supreme Brahman is not the absolute truth. There is something that's more powerful than the Brahman that can bring it under control and put it under illusion. So that's the first point. That's the first contradiction which the Mayavadis cannot actually explain satisfactorily. How is it that the Supreme Satya Manantam Jnanam Brahma, that which has truth, which has eternity, it has everything, how is it that it comes under the influence of Maya? This is something they cannot explain. The second thing they can't explain is that they say Brahma is nirvishesha, without qualities. So how is it? It has no energies. There's only one, indivisible one. So how is it? Where has this shakti, this Maya, come from? If Brahma doesn't have energies, whose shakti is Maya? What is Maya then? That is also something they are not able to explain. They also can't explain how it is that Brahma becomes divisible into the individual living entities. How does the living entity that can't be cut into pieces, that can't be divided, how is it divided into all the individual living beings and then circumscribed by these material bodies? So the acharyas have explained this at length, systematically refuting each point like this. So we can understand that actually the Ghatakash Patakash theory can't pertain to the soul. The individuality of the soul is mentioned again and again in the Bhagavad Gita. For example, Mamayvansho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha Manah Shashtanindriyani Prakriti Sthani Karshati. Lord Krishna says that the living entity, Jiva Bhuta, is my eternal fragmental part and parcel. Sanatanaha. The word sanatan indicates that it's eternally a part and parcel. It's not that the jiva was at one time the whole and now has become the part and will again later become the whole. No. Otherwise, Krishna would not have used the word sanatana, which means eternally he is mama eva anshaha. He is eternally my part and parcel. So the part will always remain the part and the whole will always remain the whole. So the Mayavadis really put themselves into a hole, H-O-L-E, when they speak like this. Because they can't explain these logical points when it comes to the crutch. So the living entity is eternal. Natvevaham jatunasam natvam neme janadipaha na chayivana bhavishyaham sarve vayamataparam. Again in the second canto, Krishna says, look, O Arjuna, here are the kings, and here is you, and here am I. Never was a time when we all did not exist, nor will there be a time when we will not exist. So obviously he's not talking about the body, because there was a time when all these kings did not exist. and there would be a time when these kings would cease to exist. So obviously Krishna is speaking about the eternal soul. He is not speaking about the body. And when he says never was there time and never will there be a time, he indicates that the living entity is eternal. And even the jnana yogis, whose aspiration it is to merge themselves into the impersonal Brahman, that merging does not actually extinguish the individuality as they would like it to be. It cannot be, because the individuality is eternally maintained. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions, just as when a green parrot enters into a green tree, it seems that the parrot has merged into the tree. It is so. The parrot has indeed merged into the tree, but it has not lost its individual existence. In the same way, even when the individual spirit soul reaches the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, the Brahman, it doesn't lose its individual identity. It's only that the living entity cannot experience the rasa or the taste of bhakti, of Krishna consciousness. It just remains as it is, without the higher taste, experiencing what is called Brahma Sukha, which means the bliss of just identifying with spirit and becoming free from the disturbances of material existence. But beyond that, the transcendental bliss of serving Krishna and loving Krishna, that they are missing out on. So sometimes, as Srila Prabhupada explains, they may even come back into the material world and experience the bitterness of material relationships, the bittersweet material relationships, because they want something. They just can't be living like that without any relationships. So spiritual existence is variegated. It exists in a variegated fashion in the spiritual world. And the fact that there is variety here in the material world means that there must be variety and differentiation in the spiritual world, because this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So the Vaishnava understanding is that the soul, after liberation, actually resumes its original constitutional identity, which was covered over in the conditioned state. It's not that the soul is destroyed, that the soul merges, that the sky in the pot merges into the sky, the universal totality of the reservoir of sky. The five elements, they merge into their individual reservoirs. That is a fact. But the soul doesn't. The soul remains eternal. Therefore, in this verse, Shukadeva Goswami is saying that in the same way, when the gross and subtle bodies die, the living entity within resumes his spiritual identity. So he's saying the opposite. He's not saying that the sky within becomes the same as the sky outside. Yes, in quality it is the same, but the identity of the living entity remains. He remains an eternal individual. That is what Shukadeva Goswami is saying. And therefore King Parikshit also is not going to lose his individuality. He will eternally remain a person. It brings to mind a little story. You see, the Mayavadis, they have many mantras. One of them is Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahma, which is a fact, we agree. I am Brahma means I am spirit, but I am not Parabrahma, I am not Supreme Brahma. I am just tiny Brahma. I am this tiny, infinitesimally small particle of spiritual energy, 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. That's what I am. And Krishna is Parabrahman. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan. Sometimes they also say, Tattvamasi, thou art that. So they don't have a name for that, but thou art that. You are that. And they also say, Soham, And this soham is quite popular. I've met many people who chant this as a mantra, just like we chant the Hare Krishna mantra. They chant soham, 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 soham. Sah aham, I am he, or he is me, I am him. So they say that I am the same as the Absolute. So one time there was a sadhaka, there was a person who was keen to find out spiritual knowledge and truth, and he was seeking. And he was sitting trying to meditate. He didn't know what to meditate on, how to meditate, but he just wanted to find truth. And so some Mayavadi sannyasi happened to come by, and he said, oh, it's good that you are seeking the truth. So I'll give you this mantra. Now you chant this mantra. Soham, 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 because you are him. You are the absolute truth. So chant this soham, soham. So he was innocent. So he started chanting soham, soham, soham. And after some time, when the Mayavada sannyasi had walked away, by the Lord's arrangement, a Vaishnava happened to walk by. And he said, what are you chanting? Soham, soham? That's not correct. Okay, anyway, since you're accustomed now to chanting soham, just make a small change. Just add da before that. What does it become? Da soham, da soham, da soham. Dasah aham, I am dasa, I am servant, I am servant. So nice, it sounds nice. So he started chanting da soham, da soham, da soham. Then the Mayavadi sannyasi was walking back now after a few days, and he was shocked. He said, Dasoham? You are not the Das, you are the whole, you are the complete. So anyway, since you are chanting this Dasoham, just add a little something before that. Add Sa. So what does it become? Sada Soham. Sada means always. Okay. Sada means always, so I am always him. I am always him. I am always the absolute truth. Sada soham, sada soham, sada soham. And after a few days, the Vaishnava was returning. Now he was shocked again. What is this sada soham business here? Anyway, you're accustomed to chanting this sada soham, so just add a little something before that. What do you add? Da again. Daso dasoham, daso dasoham. I am the servant of the servant, I am the servant of the servant, I am the servant of the servant. And I hope that that was the end of it. And I hope that the Mayavadi didn't come back again. So that's the difference between the Mayavada conception and the devotee, the Vaishnava conception. The Mayavadis think we are the whole, they are the whole. And the Vaishnavas understand that we are eternally the servant of the servant of Lord Krishna. Gopi bhartuhu padakamalayor dasa dasa anudasaha. So this is the conception. In fact, the very fact that service is not possible when we merge into Brahman is the main reason why devotees don't want to merge into the Brahman. What is that verse? Let me try to remember, which Hanuman says. It's a famous verse. Bhava bandha chire tasyai sprihayami na muktaye. Bhavan prabhur aham dasa iti yatra vilupyate. Yeah, that's the verse. So Hanuman is praying to Lord Ram, and he says, my dear Lord, Bhava bandha chire tasyai sprihayami na muktaye. I don't want to be liberated and all my bondage to be destroyed by being merged into your impersonal aspect. I don't seek that. My mind doesn't desire it. Why not? Because the conception that Bhavan Prabhu, you are my Lord, Aham Dasa, that I am your servant, will be destroyed. Because then I will start imagining that I am the Absolute, I am the Supreme. So therefore I don't want this kind of liberation. I simply want to be your servant. Bhavan Prabhur Aham Dasa. You are the Lord and I am the servant. Hanuman, of course, is the best example of the servant of the Lord in the Dasya Ras. So the devotees, they are very, very clear about this point. And it brings to mind another little pastime. When Haridas Thakur was traveling, he was walking. This was much before the other pastimes took place with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He came to a place where Govardhan Mazumdar and Hiranya Mazumdar were living. They were the father and uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. They were quite wealthy. They were landlords. And they would manage the treasury of the Muslim king. And they had a priest whose name was Balaram Acharya. Now when Haridas Thakur came to that place, Balaram Acharya, he invited Haridas Thakur to stay in his house and he hosted him and he was very faithfully serving Haridas Thakur. And one time he realized that there was an assembly where Govardhan and Hiranya Mazumdar would get together with their associates. And he brought Haridas Thakur to this assembly. And the Mazumdars were actually quite pious. They were Vaishnavas. Mahaprabhu called them Praya Vaishnava, almost Vaishnava. So they were Vaishnavas, but they also had some little material desires. So when Haridas Thakur entered into the assembly, the Mazumdars started glorifying Haridas Thakur as a great Vaishnava. And many of the others also started glorifying. They said he chants 300,000 names of Krishna every day and so on. And then they asked him to speak something. And so someone said actually, yes, this chanting of the holy name is very nice, because by so doing, one can destroy all one's sins. And someone said, well, actually, by chanting the holy name, one can become liberated from the bondage of material existence. So, after all these opinions were being offered, then Haridas Thakur said, well, actually, my dear friends, this is not the real goal or the benefit of chanting the holy names. Liberation and freedom from sinful reaction is only a mere byproduct of chanting the holy names. The real purpose of chanting the holy names is to develop love for Krishna. This is the ultimate purpose. When we chant, then we get ecstatic symptoms. Evam vratah supriya nam kirtya jatanu rago druta chitta uchaihi hasatyato rotiti roti gayati unmadavan rityati loka bahyaha. This is a verse from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by the 9 Yogendras, in which they describe that a person in ecstatic love of Godhead, he sometimes laughs, sometimes cries, he dances, jumps, and he's ecstatic in chanting the holy name, and he doesn't care about what people think. Loka bahiha, he's not concerned about what society says about him. And so he's saying that to develop such ecstatic love is the goal of chanting the holy name. And then he says, Haridas Thakur, that just by a mere glimpse of the offenseless chanting of the holy name, all these sinful reactions, etc., can be destroyed. Just as when the sunshine, when the sun is about to rise, even before it rises, the darkness and the fear of thieves, etc., that goes along with the darkness is destroyed. And when the sun fully rises, then there is full knowledge, full light everywhere. In the same way, just by a glimpse of offenseless chanting, one can attain liberation. One can destroy one's sinful reactions. And when the holy name actually rises, the pure chanting of the holy name happens, then Krishna prema will automatically come. Yes, yesterday evening we were experiencing so much happiness and ecstasy when the chanting was going on. Sri Prahlad Prabhu and others were chanting so wonderfully. And we actually got a glimpse of that, right? You actually do get a little glimpse. When you're completely absorbed and happy and joyful and just chanting, and perhaps everyone could have chanted the night away also. So this is something we experience practically in our life. So Haridas Thakur was speaking like this. And then there was one gentleman called Gopal Chakravarti who was a Brahmin, but very puffed up because of his Brahmin birth. And he stood up and began to speak very arrogantly. And he said that this sadhu is saying that just by a glimpse of offenseless chanting of the holy name, one can attain liberation. That's ridiculous. People try to attain knowledge for many lifetimes. And even then, hardly a rare soul is able to attain liberation. And he's saying that just by a glimpse of chanting the holy name, one can get liberation. So, Haridas Thakur said, but yes, that's a fact. Actually, the scriptures say this. The scriptures declare that all these other things are mere byproducts. And he went on to make another nice statement. But Gopal Chakravarti was outraged. He said, if it is a fact that by namabhasa, by offenseless chanting of the holy name, one gets liberation, if it's not true that this happens, then I will cut off your nose. And there was a furor, a tumult in the whole assembly, because he had offended Haridas Thakur like this. Haridas Thakur said, if what I say is not true, I will cut off my nose. And Hiranya Mazumdar, Govardhan Mazumdar were furious because Haridas Thakur was their esteemed guest. He was a worshipable personality. And here was this Gopal Chakravarti who spoke so offensively. So all the members of the assembly stood up and began to chastise Gopal Chakravarti. And in fact, Gopal Chakravarti was sacked from his job because he was an employee of the Mazumdars. And soon thereafter, and Balram Acharya stood up. And then he spoke and said, Ghatapatiya murkutumi bhakti kaha jane. He said, you're a ghatakash patakash man, what do you know about bhakti? You see. So he was speaking like this, that your conception of life is just this ghatakash patakash business. What do you understand of chanting the holy name? Go away from here. So then, actually after a few days, Gopal Chakravarti's beautiful nose melted away. He had beautiful fingers like champaka, the buds of champaka flowers, they also melted away. He had severe leprosy. And everyone was struck with wonder to see how the reactions against a great devotee like Haridas Thakur had come so quickly. Haridas Thakur, of course, took a very humble position. And he said, no, don't mind it. You see, it's a natural thing. People, out of ignorance, they say like this. He pacified everyone and went away. He didn't take it seriously. Bhakta svabhava agya dosha. What is that verse? In Chaitanya Charitamrita somebody says, Bhakta svabhava agya dosha na svikara kare. Krishna svabhava bhakta ninda sahite na pare. So Kaviraj Goswami in another place says, the nature of a devotee is, he doesn't take seriously the offenses of an ignorant person. But Krishna cannot tolerate the offenses against a devotee. So Krishna gave a very severe reaction to Gopal Chakravarti. But the point is, that they're the Mayavadis, the Ghatakash Patakash people, as Balaram Acharya said, they cannot understand bhakti. They cannot understand the glories of bhakti, the glories of chanting the holy name. They cannot understand the glories of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is so all-pervasive in some of the other form that we can see in Prabhupada's Pranam Mantra, there is Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Karane, because it's pervading even the Western world, the entire world, in some subtle way or the other. It is only in the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas that we can find a personalistic conception of the Absolute Truth. And when there is a personalistic conception, there will be devotion. But wherever there is no personalistic conception, there cannot be devotion. Again, I remember when I was in your brahmacharya, somebody gave me a tape. In those days you had cassette tapes, you didn't have CDs and all that. And this saint is very nice. He's only chanting bhajans about Krishna. So, please hear them. So again, out of curiosity, I started hearing it. And I think it was half an hour on each side of the tape. It was 60 minutes or 80 minutes, I don't remember. But anyway, the bhajans were all nice. Everything he was speaking there was nice. And at the very end, after those 60, 80, whatever minutes were over, then there was one sentence. He said, then we merge into the cosmic oneness. And that was it. I realized never again to touch these singers. You never know. They appear to be like very devout, very devoted to Krishna. But actually you never know what is in their conception. Safer to just stick to ISKCON. Even in Vrindavan, such a melting pot. Since we're talking of pots. All kinds of philosophies, all kinds of, even in the realm of so-called devotional service, varieties, variegatedness, all kinds of conceptions come in there, you have to deal with it all the time. Someone comes up with a new idea, someone says something, someone says something, there's all kinds of upper sampradayas also. And so better we just stick to the safe path. Follow Srila Prabhupada's teachings and the sampradaya that goes with him. He himself is following a very illustrious line of great acharyas coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we just stick to his understanding and presentation and practice of Krishna consciousness and we will be safe and secure. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any comments or any questions here? Jagatarini Mataji, sorry, I didn't see you here, would you? I just saw you now. Would you like to offer any comments?
No.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the class. Well, actually, in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in some of the discussions and lectures, I heard that, and in Prabhupada also, Prabhupada writes that actually Krishna is referring to the Brahmavadis when the impersonalist conception, like, so in impersonalism also there are Mayavadis and Brahmavadis, and when I or a person who is trying to become a devotee, when he thinks about the impersonalistic conceptions, then there are Brahmavadis also inside that, and like the example of Kumaras are there, that just by the touch of the devotion, they immediately went higher, elevated. So there is a wide difference between a person who is trying to become a devotee and the Brahmavadis. So how I understand the Mayavadis and Brahmavadis, the difference? And
so your question is, what is the difference between the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis? Brahmavadis, they also accept, they worship the impersonal Brahman, but because they are attracted to the impersonal Brahman, naturally. There is a natural attraction for that impersonal worship. But they are not envious. They may not decry or deny the existence of the personality of God. Sometimes they may even know about the personality of God. Like the four Kumaras, if you study the Bhagavatam carefully, you will see that the four Kumaras were aware of the personality of Godhead because they had heard from their father and Guru Brahma. But they still had been attracted to the worship of the impersonal Brahman. However, when they went to the gates of Vaikuntha and there was that whole commotion that took place with Jay and Vijay, and then the Lord came out, and then the breeze carried the aroma of the tulsi that was offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, wafted into their nostrils, then they experienced a complete change of consciousness. And then they became devotees. So they are Brahmavadis, they were, which means that even though their attraction may be towards the impersonal, but they are not envious. And they don't deny that the Lord may have a form, may be a person. But it's just that their inclination is like that. Similarly, Shukadev Goswami, that's also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are Brahmavadis. But the Mayavadis, Prabhupada explains at one point, they have envy for the personality of Godhead. They cannot accept that God is a person. And they also say that we are, as we said, Soham, Tattvamasi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his discussions with Prakashananda Saraswati, says that the Mayavadis neglect the main mantra of the Vedas, which is the Pranava Omkar, the Om. And instead, they present the Tattvam Asi and such mantras as the main mantras of the Vedas. But that's not so. So the Mayavadis, they also decry the personality of God and the spiritual existence of God, of Krishna. The very word Mayavad indicates that they say that the body of the Lord, when he incarnates here, is made of Maya. That's Mayavad. Sometimes some devotees think that Mayavad means that when somebody is in Maya, then he's Mayavad. It's not like that. Mayavad is a conception that the Lord's body is also material, like our body. That is Mayavad. So there is envy and there is denial of the personality of Godhead. Okay? Okay. Yes, Mataji.
Maharaj, are you saying that Sukadeva Goswami is the Brahmavadi?
Well, externally, even though there is a history of the parrot and everything, but just externally.
Okay. Because I'm thinking, how could he write the Bhagavatam, considering the 10th canto, if he had a predisposition towards Brahman?
The question is that how could he write the Bhagavatam if he had a predisposition towards the Brahman? Well, if you go further back, he's actually the parrot, right? And he came in, but that's a long story, we won't go into that now. He's of course an eternal associate of the Lord, so there's no question of him being actually a Brahmavadi. But sometimes they play roles, and he did that here. And initially he was, and then later he became a pure devotee after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from his father. Just like the Kumaras, they were earlier Brahmavadis, but later they became Vaishnavas and they actually started a Sampradaya, a Vaishnav Sampradaya. So similarly, Shukadev Goswami was initially meditating, and there's verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam for that. Couple of verses that indicate Shukadev himself, Suta Goswami says that he was absorbed in the impersonal. And in other Puranas it is explained that Shukadev Goswami was actually in his mother's womb for 12 years, and sometimes it is said 16 years, and he refused to come out because he was afraid he would fall into Maya. And then even Vyasadev could not convince him, and Krishna had to come personally and convince, and then he accepted Krishna's assurance, and then he emerged, and as he emerged he walked away to become a brahmachari. And then Vyasadeva went after him saying, ha putra, oh my son, and Shukadeva walked away. And what is not mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is there in some other Puranas, is that the disciples of Vyasadeva, they began to think, what can we do to keep Shukadeva back? So they chanted the Barhapidam verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered one of the most beautiful verses. And then he stopped in his tracks, because that verse explains the beauty of Krishna. And when he heard that, he just stood stunned. And then a doubt came in his mind that, well, if Krishna, who is being described here as the most beautiful person, what's the guarantee that he will accept me? he might just reject me. And then they spoke the famous Aho Bakiyam Stanakala Kutram verse spoken by Uddhava, that Krishna is the most merciful because he even gave Putana the place of a nurse in the spiritual world. And then he was satisfied. So then he became, from an external point of view, even a pure devotee of the Lord. He was already on the Brahmabhuta stage.
Some people say that you couldn't write the beautiful 10th canto of the Bhagavatam in the snowy, cold Himalayas, and rather it was written in the part of Vrindavan, which is on the frequent part.
Oh.
There's an ashram, Padre ashram.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't know that. Thank you for this information. Yeah. Okay, I think, yes.
Do we have a risk of going into the impersonal liberation by committing offenses as devotees, even though we're chanting Hare Krishna?
Okay, the question is that is there a risk that a devotee may fall into the impersonal Brahman by committing offenses against Vaishnavas? Well, no. Usually a devotee wouldn't go to the impersonal Brahman. Offenses will result in other things that will keep us in this material world. But there's no reference I have read anywhere that indicates that by committing offenses a Vaishnava will go to the impersonal Brahman unless he was formerly an impersonalist and he goes back to that situation. You see, what happens is when we commit offenses, we lose Krishna's merciful protection. And we may go back to doing activities that we were doing before we came to Krishna consciousness. So if we were engaging in bad habits before, we would start doing those things again. There is a story of Ramachandra Puri, the disciple of Madhavendra Puri, who was latently an impersonalist. And he somehow became a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, but he committed a grave offense against his spiritual master at the time when Madhavendra Puri was about to depart from this world. It's a wonderful pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then he became the object of Madhavendra Puri's censure and his curse, actually. And then Kaviraj Goswami says that he lost taste in devotional service. He just became critical of devotees after that. So that kind of thing may happen, but merely on the strength of offense, one may not actually go to the impersonal Brahman. Rather, one would receive reactions here, and eventually one would overcome them by some or the other way of begging forgiveness from the devotees and so on. Life after life it may continue, but eventually success is assured. But of course we do have to be very careful about offenses. Yeah, one last question.
Maharaj, what does the Upanishad say? Is Brahman mentioned as the supreme in the Upanishad?
Is Brahman mentioned as supreme? Yes, it is. Because it is an aspect of the Lord. Vadanti tattva vidas tattvam jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti shakyate. So the absolute truth has three aspects. There is the impersonal effulgence, there is the localized Paramatma, and there is Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. So all three together form the absolute truth. So therefore, Brahma is absolute, correct. We don't deny that. But to understand only Brahman and to deny that there is something beyond, that there is a localized Paramatma, and that there is Bhagavan even beyond that, that is incorrect. Okay? Thank you very much. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Lord Premanande.